May it please the Court, I'm Allison Mendel. I'm CJA counsel for Stacy Hunt from Anchorage, Alaska. I'm sure that the Court is familiar with the briefs, and there are quite a number of issues that are treated in the briefs, so I'm not going to try to hit on all of them today. I think there are three principal errors in the sentencing record which make it absolutely necessary that the case be remanded for resentencing. The first is the question of the drug type and quantity. I think it's quite clear from the record of the change of plea, and I think even the government agrees with this, that Mr. Hunt did not admit to the drug type or the drug quantity.
Their position is that he did admit to the drug type.
Well, I think what they said,
they acknowledged that there was a problem with the quantity.
Yes, I think what they're saying is that he didn't deny the drug type, but that's not the nature of the defendant's admissions at a change of plea. He has to affirmatively admit the facts to which he's pleading, and he doesn't have to. I mean, it makes no difference whether he then lists all the facts to which he's not pleading. And it's clear that there is nothing in his plea where he admits either the drug type or the drug quantity. And in fact, there's that one troubling statement by the judge where he says to the defendant, you admit that it was cocaine or some illegal drug. And the defendant says,
a controlled substance.
Controlled substance. Thank you, Your Honor. And the defendant says, yes. So it's almost inviting him not to commit to a particular type of drug.
But the whole surrounding colloquy made it very clear that they were talking about cocaine, and he admitted to that, did he not?
No, I don't think he did, not at the change of plea. The time where there was an admission, so-called, about the type of drug was something his attorney said earlier on, but the defendant never said, yes, I knew it was cocaine, and that's what I'm admitting to.
The product was whatever it was in a sealed box.
Correct.
As far as arriving in Alaska, and then was examined. But he didn't have his hands on it at all, did he?
He never did. He never
saw the contents, never weighed it out. His counsel didn't have that opportunity either.
That's correct. There is no allegation that he opened the box, that he saw what was in it, that he had an opportunity to know what was in it, to weigh the contents, or anything. There is simply no allegation.
Let me ask you this. What's the remedy?
The remedy is resentencing. And as I understand,
take it all the way out. What would happen at a resentencing?
The range is lower, isn't it?
Yes, I think the range is drastically lower, starting at zero. And as I understand this court's precedence, the government at resentencing would have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt the drug type and quantity as part of the sentencing. But that certainly is not what he pled to.
So in your view, if we were to agree with you,
yes.
So it's your position on remand, it could go back for resentencing, and the government could still attempt to establish that it was cocaine, but they would just have a higher burden of proof. Doesn't he have a right to have a jury trial on that?
Well, Your Honor, I confess I am still confused on that issue. I think U.S. versus Thomas says he doesn't have to have a jury trial, but he does benefit from the reasonable doubt. The judge has to find beyond a reasonable doubt.
He's been tried. He's been convicted.
Yes.
And the question here is the sentencing.
Correct.
And it's based on proof that came in during the course of the conviction. Is that not correct?
No, the proof came in the course of the sentencing.
The assertion was made in the course of sentencing, but there wasn't a factual question submitted to the jury as to amount.
No. Well, no, there was no jury. I mean, there was a change of plea, and the plea did not include the type or amount of drugs. So there simply is no fact on which to sentence him from the plea.
Well, let me ask you about this passage. The AUSA states at the plea hearing, The elements would be that on or about a certain date he attempted to possess a parcel that contained a little over a kilo of cocaine, and he did so knowingly. The court then asked Hunt if he understood, and he said yes. Now, what do we do with that?
Well, I think the question, I think that's really plain. I think that the judge said, do you understand that that's their allegation? And he says yes. When he goes on to state what elements he's pleading to, the facts that he agrees to, that is not included.
Then he says later, yes, I understand these elements. Of course, he says he doesn't agree, he has no knowledge of the specific amount and never opened the package, but I do accept responsibility for whatever was in it. Now, the whole discussion is all about cocaine and the cocaine in the package and over 500 or over a kilo. Don't we take that into consideration or not?
I think that is exactly the fact situation in U.S. versus Thomas, where he said, I'm taking responsibility for whatever was in that bag, but I don't know what was in the bag because I didn't look at it, and I'm taking your word for it. Well, he didn't. Thomas didn't take the government's word for how much it weighed. There was a dispute about that. Okay. But in this case, my client did not dispute the chemical findings, but he said he had no knowledge of what it was or how much it weighed. I mean, this gets to what I count as major error number two, which is the only thread linking his knowledge of what was in that box was the alleged confession. And the government keeps coming back to
that. Well, it's alleged that he ordered a box, and that's admitted, isn't it? You concede
yes.
That he ordered a product.
Well,
but you don't concede that he had opened the box and knew and weighed and
ordered the box. I mean, actually, we don't concede that, because the whole problem of the contents of the confession, the judge declined to rule and did not rule on whether any of those facts were admissible in the sentencing, and Hunt clearly objected to the use of anything in the confession, and the judge said, never mind, I'm going to listen to it and I'll decide based on what's admissible, and never made a ruling on whether the text of the confession was admissible evidence in the sentencing.
Does res judicata apply here?
I'm sorry? To what issue?
Well,
I'm
on the sentencing. I mean,
back for rehearing?
That's the point I'm trying to get at.
And the government can put on such proof as it may have?
Or he may want to try. He may want to go to trial.
Well, he might. I mean, are we talking about, you know, I don't think that the government can put on new evidence at a resentencing. I think that the government...
Why not? We've said on a remand that we generally send back on an open record.
Counselor, you haven't consulted with your client on whether he'd go to a new trial, have you?
No, not at all. Absolutely not.
Do you feel comfortable making a commitment on his behalf?
No, absolutely not. I have no notion whether he would be willing to go to trial or want to go to trial.
Counselor, you're down to about a minute. Do you want to reserve? You may do so.
I do. Thank you, Your Honor.
Very well. We'll hear from the government. Counsel, you may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Andrea Stewart, and I represent the United States in this case. There are several issues in this appeal, but the primary one that was just focused on was what type of drug was pled to and sentenced in this case. And the record is clear that it was cocaine. It was never disputed that it was cocaine.
Yeah, but the key here is, did he or did he not admit to its being cocaine? And I can't find that. You heard my colloquy. Certainly there's a surrounding aura that we're all talking about cocaine, but the words were never in his mouth. So what do we do?
Certainly. And, Your Honor, in the normal course of a plea, the government in our district gives a factual basis. The defendant then says yes or no, and you move on. The defendant doesn't typically have to say, I agree it was that I that there was coke. I agree. I attempted to possess it.
Here he specifically denied knowledge of the weight, and he denied knowledge of the substance.
And proved that he never had access to the box.
As Your Honor, Judge O'Scanlan was pointing out earlier, in the discussion of the elements and the penalties at the in the record at 5, 6, 8, 9, and 11, the discussion was about cocaine, and the defendant acknowledged that they were discussing cocaine. When the government set out its factual basis at 15 and 16 in the record, the defendant said, and in the factual record, the government specifically references the confession that the Hunt had made previously, the defendant's own admission, which was not objected to at the change of plea. This is at 15 and 16 in the record. The government makes reference, this is a quote, the written statement at Hunt made a written statement admitting that he had received a controlled delivery of over 500 grams of cocaine. He admit that he ordered it, the drugs, from an individual identified as DT. So in the factual basis is his Hunt's own admission. And what Hunt disputes further down the page is he says, for the most part, those facts are true. The only thing he disputes is that he didn't have specific knowledge of what was in the package. And that's consistent with the elements. In the elements of this possession, attempt to possess with intent to distribute, the defendant does not have to know what the drug was, although I think
You're saying that somebody could put some cocaine in my pocket and that I could be convicted?
No, he had to have the an intent to attempt to possess it. And here he says he admits that he ordered it.
Is there a question of record? Did you intend to possess cocaine?
I'm sorry?
Is there a question of record with an answer? Did you intend to possess cocaine?
Well, I believe at the record 15 and 16, that's where it sets out that factual basis.
Does he testify to that?
In the record, unobjected to, is his admission that was provided in writing, and it's cited in the record without objection. The only thing he objects to is that he didn't know exactly how much and what was in that package. And
I admit all the elements of an 841A1, as I said, I did not receive the package and open it, so I have no specific knowledge of what it contained other than it did contain a controlled substance that I do know, and I did attempt to possess that controlled substance.
He says, for the most part, the facts are true. So he's admitting everything above, except for that he says he didn't know what was in it. And as I said, you don't have to know what was in it. This is just like Thomas, which is cited by the defendant and was discussed here previously. Thomas did the same exact thing, and he said, I didn't know what was in the bag, but he had reckless disregard as to what was in the bag. And the element is you don't actually have to know what was in the bag. He knew it was a controlled substance. That's what he has to know. There's no dispute anywhere in the record that it was cocaine. And in fact, even if the court found that there was an error, it is a harmless error.
Why is that?
It's harmless beyond a reasonable doubt because there's overwhelming and uncontroverted evidence, undisputed in the record, that the drug he attempted to possess was cocaine.
Well, that might sustain a jury verdict of guilty, but we have a change of plea hearing.
I believe this is
we're dealing with a guilty plea.
I believe that's the same as Zepeda Martinez, that's the Ninth Circuit case where it was a removal case. Similarly, in that case, and following Butler versus Cutler, I believe, they said that, that Zepeda Martinez was a change of plea, and they said there was undisputed evidence in the record that the drug attempted to possess was well, in this case, cocaine, not only at the change of plea, as we already mentioned, but also the defendant at the pre-sentence report in paragraphs 20 and 29 were never objected to that set out the drug and the drug amount. He did dispute the drug amount, at least at the change of plea. And then the lab report, this was an extensively briefed, and there was 4 briefings and 3 hearings.
Those all related to the sentencing, though.
Correct. Well, what it goes to is that the record is the fact that it was cocaine was never disputed, never. What he disputed was that
it was never disputed. He expressly said he doesn't know what's in it.
That's different than saying I don't that wasn't cocaine, and he doesn't have to know what's in the bag to be guilty of the crime. Okay. At the sentencing hearing. At 53 and 56, the lab report came in that it's 1.2 kilograms of cocaine. That was undisputed that it was cocaine at that time as well. And this isn't evidence, but it's shows that everybody was on the same page going throughout that the dispute was whether he knew it was cocaine, not that it was cocaine. At docket number, or at the record at 73, supplemental, and I'm citing all my sites are to the supplemental excerpt of record. He's not, this is the defense counsel. He's speaking of Hunt. Oh, he's not innocent. He knew it was cocaine. He accepts responsibility for that. That was at the first sentencing hearing. At the third sentencing hearing, at the record at 212, the defense counsel says the official position is that for the guidelines is that it was an unspecified amount of cocaine. So there's nowhere in the record that there was any dispute as to the type of drug. There was a dispute over to the quantity and whether he knew what type of drug it is. But I think even that is overcome with the change of plea at the record at 15 and 16.
Let me ask you, what assume for a moment that we don't agree with your argument. What's the remedy?
Well, as I said, I believe it is harmless error beyond reasonable doubt.
No.
Okay, but if the judges were to find that there was an error and that it wasn't harmless,
what happens on resentencing? That's my question. Let's say you're back in front of the district judge and he's pled to the record is what it is with his plea. What happens at sentencing? What's the range? What has to happen?
Well, I think. It's a tough question. There doesn't seem to be any precedent for it.
There would be double jeopardy.
If he was sentenced?
He had to go back and be resentenced, or there was supplemental testimony in proof of what you're trying to prove?
I guess I bring it back to there doesn't need to be any additional evidence because it's in the record that it was 1.2 kilograms of cocaine. It's undisputed, and the only dispute is whether he knew it.
That's not what he acknowledged. Still not.
Yeah, we're talking about a guilty plea here. We're not talking about a conviction after a jury trial. There's a difference.
And, again, I rely on Zepeda-Martinez, which in that case it was a removal of an alien, and there was mention of the removal at the change of plea, but then at the sentencing there was a dispute as to whether it was specific enough, and the Ninth Circuit found that the record was overwhelming and uncontroverted that the removal had occurred, and that included the PSR and the documentation and evidence at sentencing.
Okay, but suppose we remand for resentencing. Suppose that's what the court does. What happens at that point? Can he withdraw his guilty plea? Is the court confined to a marijuana level rather than the cocaine level?
Well, I believe it is.
Or what?
It's a sentencing issue, so it's not an element of the crime. So then the court could make findings, and it wouldn't be double jeopardy, as to the type and quantity of the drug amount. So it could be sent back and made a finding beyond reasonable doubt as to the drug type and quantity because it was an element, so it wouldn't be double jeopardy. I did want to make one note on another issue. Regarding the notice of upward departure, in my brief responding to defendants' arguments about whether the gang association was enough for upward departure regarding notice in 32H, I focused solely on the fact that there was actual notice of the gang response. I also wanted to point out that there in the record, that's focusing the point too narrowly, that in fact the entire criminal history, the 20 years of violence and drug trafficking that was underrepresented after several adjustments were made, that was the basis for the upward adjustment. And there was notice in the record, both in the PSR, in the government's pleadings, and at the in the second court hearing, that there would be an upward departure. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. Ms. Mendel, you have some reserve time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm afraid neither party to this case seems to have a very good answer to what happens on resentencing, and I do think that the question is very murky, and I have not focused my arguments on that issue. I do think it's a very difficult question, and I don't think that the government can go back and put on a new case the second time around that they didn't put on the first time. I just want to comment on one.
But I think the essence of your argument is that he's confined to the marijuana line, right?
That's
would be
correct.
Time served or 1 year or something like that.
I believe so, yes.
To 15 years.
Yes, which is a huge difference.
And in particular in the light of a client who has quite a record.
He has quite a record, and he has served time and been penalized for all of the things for which he was convicted. So I don't really think it's the court's job to have to punish him for things, other things.
No, of course not.
What's your response to the government's argument that because a sentencing factor is not an element, it's not double jeopardy?
Well,
as long as he finds beyond a reasonable doubt.
I'm afraid I haven't thought that one all the way through.
All right. That's fine.
I do want to say one thing in my last 10 seconds, and that is the government keeps saying, both in the brief and at oral argument, that there was, quote-unquote, no objection to certain statements by the government made at the change of plea. As I'm sure the court completely understands, the change of plea is not an evidentiary proceeding. The government is not putting on evidence, and you don't have to object to the evidence or where they say the evidence came from. They simply make an offer of proof of what they plan to prove, and the defendant agrees with it or doesn't agree with it. And even though the government said a bunch of things that the defendant didn't agree to, those are then not admitted facts simply because the government said them.
All right, thank you, counsel. The case just argued will be submitted for decision.